Welcome back to our lessons on Pope Francis and Rosmini. We are analyzing the social ethical aspects which are common in Rosmini and Pope Francis in a double issue. On the one hand, to actualize the thought of Antonio Rosmini, to reflect on what could be the actual dimensions of his reflections, and on the other side, to analyze the more deep and the more systematic dimensions in that what Pope Francis is saying, is underlining often in only a few words, only in some sorts of aphorisms or in some also personal stories he is presenting, but which often have more deep and more systematic dimensions. And to analyze the systematic dimensions of his affirmations, the thought of Rosmini can help us. And we are in the second point of the social ethical aspects, or in the point of the collegiality as ecclesiological expression of the unity of church. Quoting some paragraphs of the third wound of the church in Rosmini's work, we now can pass to the paragraph 62, where we read, "The immediate successors of the apostles were poor, humble persons whose attitude is to one another was governed by the simplicity infused in souls by the gospel and then expressed from the heart. Such simplicity enables a person to communicate directly with his neighbor, making daily life between saintly people easy, delightful, useful, and holy." So we see here that a certain mystic dimension, as Pope Francis says, or a certain dimension of living the relationship to the absolute directly in all day life, does not lead to an individualization of people, does not lead people to not act anymore in relationship to others, but on the contrary, does improve the social relationship, does enable person to communicate directly with neighbors, to make daily life between people easy, delightful, useful, and holy. These are dimensions we read also in Pope Francis. In Pope Francis, who every time underlines that the faith in God, the direct relationship to the absolute, does make sure that all day life, that our all daily relationships result improved, result better, result more easy. And this Rosmini is underlining here in the concrete sense for the aim of the bishop's life, but we can read it also as a dimension for all the Christians. And Rosmini goes on, "This was how the first bishops lived, but once they had been surrounded and hemmed in by temporal power, access to them became difficult. Worldly ambition invented titles and established protocol, so that people had to swallow their pride as the price of contacting their own bishops, although even this was a tribute based on deceit and lies." So, the invention of titles, of protocols, of a formal life made sure that people did not live anymore in a human way their social relationships. And this was an effect not of the fact that people now are believing in the absolute, but was a fact of political power. Believing in the absolute, having a close relationship to the absolute for Christians is, as Pope Francis is every time underlining, is the very new basis of improving all day life. And in 66, Rosmini says, the history of the Church also shows that bishops attaining secular dominion easily become enemies and involved in subversion, wars, and other horrible violence that has convulsed nations for whole centuries. Atrocious onslaughts against humanity are fatal to a Church founded on love, and scandalous on the highest degree when perpetrated by those to whom Christ has said, I sent you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. 69. Despite the criticism and calumnies leveled against the Church on account of her involvement in struggles of this kind, admirably generous struggles, their effect was to form in the world a completely new sovereignty and monarchy, that is, a Christian monarchy. Our eternal God made the unbridled government of the rulers of this world depend for its model upon the peacemaking government of the bishops of the Church. Slaves vanished from the Christian world because the Church of Christ has only children. Arbitrary power disappeared because the Church possesses only reasonable holy power. The few who used the majority simply as means were swept away because the power of the Church is a ministry and service rendered by few to many, by persons sacrificing themselves to the good of their neighbors. Of the new Christian dimension of the ministry as a service, we just talked about. This wasn't a Christian idea. This is not the feudalistic idea of power, which is personal power. For Church and Christian tradition, instead, ministry is a means to serve, is a service to the others, rendered by the few to many. And then here is another aspect. Slaves vanished from the Christian world, said Rosmini. Arbitrary power disappeared. So here is another positive point resulting from the conjunction between Christianity and feudalistic order. We said that for Rosmini, feudalistic order is not the original Christian order, that feudalistic order has a spirit which in a certain way is opposed to the Christian spirit of the equality of all persons, sons and daughters of the same father. But for Rosmini, the historical fact that Christianity was conjunct to the feudalistic structures has also positive results. It is one of the moments that the providence has thought for the history of human mankind. And therefore, says Rosmini, in its historical sense, it has its importance. This importance was, as we saw in the last lesson, first that Christianity was in a certain sense brought into all of the dimensions of the Occidental life, in all of the political and social institutions. So the Christian spirit pervaded these institutions. And now, pervading these institutions, Christian spirit led to a changing. Christian spirit changed, not rapidly, changed slowly, but in a certain way, in a very certain way, certainly changed the spirit of people. And after centuries of this process in which the Christian spirit pervaded, illuminated, was connected with other political institutions, on the long run, it brought to a change of mentality. And this change of mentality is the real revolution for Rosmini. This is the real revolution. And in this moment, when Christian spirit changed mentality, this revolution could also become political reform, which in the concrete historical circumstances was realized as political revolution. But in general, spiritual reform, reform of Church, leads also to political reform. And this is one point which for Rosmini, in a historical perspective, is very important. The Christian spirit changed mentality. This is the real revolution. This is the real spiritual revolution which stands behind that what on the superficial level on history then was realized as political revolution. Rosmini always reads the society on two levels. On the spiritual level, on the level of ideas, on the level of evolvement of ideas, and on the level of facts. What on the level of political facts was realized as the imposition of revolution ideas against Christian culture and against church, on the level of history ideas, and on the level of spiritual evolvement of Occidental culture, it was the real realization of the Christian spirit. And the both most important results were the abolishment of slavery and the disappear of arbitrary power. Let's come now to the third point of the social ethical reflection. As we said, the person in the center of all social ethical reflection, the person in the center of all institutions, the person in the center of interpretation of society, state and law. So in the first point, let's have a look to two addresses, to one address of Pope Francis and of paragraph of the encyclical Lumen Fidei, so of two different affirmations of the Pope, and the first is an address to the Centesimus Annus Pro Pontifice Foundation. Centesimus Annus Pro Pontifice Foundation is the worldwide foundation which has members of all of the types of the social economical life and wants to reflect and to develop the social thinking of the Church. And on the May the 25th, Pope Francis stated, "Unemployment, the lack or loss of work, is a phenomenon that is spreading like an oil slick in vast areas of the West and is alarmingly widening the boundaries of poverty." So he turns to speak about poverty, but now of poverty in the sense of unemployment. The real problem of unemployment, let's say, gives another dimension of interpretation of poverty. We said in the beginning of these lessons that poverty is not only material poverty for Pope Francis, but it is a together of many, many social dimensions, of many an indicator of many social problems. And one of the central ones, firstly, we declined the poverty in its analogous dimensions of intellectual, cultural, material, etc., spiritual poverty. But now we are approaching on a dimension of poverty which is centering deeper on the constitution of human person. While the analogous dimensions of spiritual, of intellectual, of cultural poverty were the indication where Christianity fails in meeting other people, in facing other people, in facing social situations, now the theme of unemployment is bringing us to a more anthropological reflection of the dimensions, of the social ethical dimensions of Pope Francis. In the unemployment, we deal with the anthropological dimension of person. Moreover, says Pope Francis, there is no worse material poverty, I am keen to stress, than the poverty which prevents people from earning their bread and deprives them of the dignity of work. The most suffering dimension of poverty, the worst dimension of material poverty is unemployment. And why? Because also in unemployment, it is not only the material aspect which is concerning Pope Francis, but the anthropological one. Because people, because the person is not able anymore to realize its personhood, which consists in his specific responsibility, in his specific responsibility to provide his future. To provide his future. This is, in all the Christian tradition, one of the most essential dimensions of what is person, the capacity to provide the future. Because in this providing the future for himself and for others, also here is the social aspect, is, let's say, the anthropological declination of what is divine providence, as God provides for all of us. Also, the person has to provide for himself. The person is not a passive element in his relationship to God. The relationship to God, the relationship to the absolute, the immediate relationship to the absolute. And of this problem we will treat in the second part of these lessons when we treat about faith and reason. But already now we can say that the relationship to the absolute does not lead to the result that the individual is passive. No. The Christian conception of the relationship to the absolute is the basis for the most original and for the most authentic activity and activeness of the person. Person is person in his activity. So, the primary social dimension, the primary social preoccupation and issue of the state is not to provide material help to the people, which would lead to a passive self-comprehension of these people. Or, let's to say, comprehension of the people, which let them be only those who ask for material sustainment. It is not only material sustainment, it has to be sustainment in a way which enables person to turn to be active persons, to turn to be active providence for themselves. Only this would restitute the dignity to persons. Help which leaves people to become passive elements of society is no help according to their dignity. This is only also a central part of the encyclical Caritas in Veritate of Benedict XVI, and it turns here when Pope Francis on May the 25th is talking about poverty in the form of unemployment. The current crisis, says the Pope, is not only economic and financial, but is rooted in an ethical and anthropological crisis. Concern with the idols of power, profit and money, rather than with the value of the human person, has become a basic norm for functioning and the crucial criterion for organization. We have forgotten and are still forgetting that over and above business, logic and the parameters of the market is the human being. And that something is man and women in as much as they are human beings by virtue of their profound dignity. To offer them the possibility of living a dignified life and of actively participating in the common good. Dignified life and actively participating in the common good. An active participation. And this active participation we do not only have in a political sense to vote, but also in an anthropological sense, to be providence for himself and for others, first of all, for their own family. And in the encyclical Lumen Fidei, published on June the 29th, we read in paragraph 54, absorbed and deepened in the family, faith becomes a light capable of illuminating all our relationships in society. Here, in this part of the encyclical is very interesting, and this is one of the new parts of the encyclical, because the relationship between faith and reason, how it is described in the encyclical Lumen Fidei, is in the line of Fides et Ratio, for example, of John Paul II in 1998, and other official pronouncements of the Church in many books of Pope Benedict XVI. So this relationship of faith and reason in the encyclical Lumen Fidei is not really new, but a new aspect of it is that it is connected not only with the dimension of the individual, but also with family, with relationship. And that, therefore, of the dimension of the relationship of faith and reason, to which we turn in the second part of these lessons, is coming out immediately also social implications. Implications also for social institutions like family. As an experience of the mercy of God the Father, it sets us on the path of brotherhood. From the faith is coming out that the person has to be active, that therefore unemployment is against the dimension of person. And the other sense is the person is with his existence, with his very, very profound existence, which is affirmed also in the relationship to the absolute, in the faith, is radicated in a social relationship, in the faith and in society. And that faith gives to the dimension of family and society the dimension of brotherhood. We cannot require from political society that people leave the dimensions of brotherhood in the society, and perhaps not even in the family. We cannot require it. Why can we say that? In a religious sense, we can require it. Church can require it. Church can require it with the means of spirituality and faith. But political society, government, cannot require it, because the ways in which political society and government require it are the means of force, of law. And by force and law, we cannot constrain the people to live the brotherhood. Brotherhood is a reality of freedom, of liberty. Without personal freedom, brotherhood cannot be lived. Brotherhood cannot be enforced. I cannot be enforced to be a brother to the other. I can be enforced to respect him. I can be enforced to tolerate him. I can be enforced to a certain dimension of solidarity. Also, solidarity can be enforced, but not brotherhood. So brotherhood is not the very dimension of civil society. Therefore, I cannot understand in 100%, in a certain way I can understand, but not at all, this economy, these conceptions of economy as brotherhood, economy as realization of the real brotherhood. We cannot require it in a civil society. These are dimensions which come from a specific ethical or religious dimension. From a specific ethical or religious dimension, but it is not a political dimension. And therefore, this experience, as we say here, is experience, authentic experience of faith in society. Faith is giving to society the dimension of brotherhood. Modernity sought to build a universal brotherhood based on equality. Yet we gradually came to realize that this brotherhood, lacking a reference to a common father as its ultimate foundation, cannot endure. We need to return to the true basis of brotherhood. The history of faith has been from the beginning a history of brotherhood, albeit not without conflict. Here we read the history of faith, not the history of humanity. How many benefits has the gaze of Christian faith brought to the city of man for the common life? Thanks to faith, we have come to understand the unique dignity of each person, something which was not clearly seen in antiquity. So we have an original aspect, original contribution of faith to the social dimensions. Faith can improve social dimensions. Not only Christian faith, also faith or also other religious dimension, perhaps also ethical dimensions. Brotherhood is an ethical dimension. Brotherhood is a dimension of perfection. But it is not a dimension which political society, by law, can enforce to people. And here is what requires our cultural context, the fundamental contribution, the fundamental dimension of faith. And in paragraph 55, we read, faith likewise offers the possibility of forgiveness, which so often demands time and effort, patience and commitment. Forgiveness is always prayer and more powerful than evil. And that the word with which God affirms our life is deeper than our every denial. So this brotherhood in society is also realized through the dimension of forgiveness. Forgiveness is a dimension which also political society cannot entail, which political society cannot require. Political society can require that a person who damages another pays for the damage. Political society can require all the terms, the various terms and dimensions of justice, the cumulative justice, the distributive justice, the legal justice. But it cannot constrain the people to really forgive the one the other. I repeat, in a certain juridical sense, yes, but not in an anthropological existential sense. In an anthropological existential sense, forgiveness is a dimension which requires an entire dimension of person and perhaps also a religious dimension of person. Forgiveness in an absolute sense, which in an absolute way, in a certain sense, in the absolute dimension of liberty and freedom of every person, makes sure that a certain dam made from one person to another can really be overcome and not only forgotten but forgiven. This requires, without any doubt, an absolute dimension of ethics or religious behavior. And this religious behavior is another central contribution of Christianity to the social dimensions of people. So in this way we see how through its anthropological reflection, the person as active center, the person as activity, and then the possibility to see the others as brothers and to really forgive the others, not only to the brothers of my family, not only to my real brothers and sisters, to the father. In these dimensions, we deal with normal anthropological dimensions of a person, but these dimensions, to applicate these dimensions to society and not only to the family, applicating it only to family would realize in the society a certain dimension of family egoism. I think only on my family, but not on the others. To applicate really the dimensions of brotherhood and forgiveness to society is one of the social results of Christianity, of the Christian idea of person. So, activeness and brotherhood and forgiveness, like is, according to Pope Francis, the central dimensions of person in the social ethical reflection. And now we will see that in Rosmini we have just realized these dimensions in an anthropological sense. And in this way, Rosmini is not the first one, evidently, but takes these dimensions on the rich tradition of anthropological reflection of Christianity, of Christianism, of the great Christian thinkers and authors in history. But Rosmini has the new aspect to think society radically, beginning from this idea of person. As we said, this is possible only after the French Revolution, after the moment in which society is not thought anymore as a feudalistic society, on the dimensions of political power in articulated in a feudal system. But radically beginning from the idea of person, from the equality of every person, beginning to think society, social relationships from here, and to construct of this Christian idea of person, the idea of society, and this in a, not in a way that we that results church as the society of faith, but that results a real civil society, society based on human reason. How is to translate, in other words, the new idea of person in social reasons, in reasons that can become constitution, in reasons that can become law, in reasons that are on the basis of how to think society. This is the main theme of the philosophy of right of Rosmini, which will be analyzed in these dimensions in our next lesson. Thank you very much.